To talk more about the project and why the update is so important, we're joined by Professor Tamara Walsh, project founder and director of the Deaths in Custody Project from the University of Queensland School of Law. Good morning, Tamara.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us to chat about this.
No problem.
Now, you founded this project back in 2016. What motivated you to start it?
Actually, it was born as a result of a discussion that Debbie Kilroy, who's CEO of Sisters Inside here in Brisbane, and I were having after we'd been in court one day. And we'd been in court representing our own clients, but of course, as lawyers, you spend a lot of time sitting around waiting in courtrooms. And we were reflecting on how we had observed, again, so many Aboriginal people, particularly Aboriginal women, coming before the criminal courts on really petty offences. And we were reflecting on how many of those Aboriginal people end up in prison for really petty offences, where really a caution probably would have been the most appropriate response. And really, it was a result of that conversation that led us to talking about overrepresentation of Aboriginal people in prisons, and then the number of prisoners that we hear about who are Aboriginal but also non-Aboriginal people who die what we would consider to be preventable deaths in custody. And we were talking as lawyers about the fact that it was really difficult to find out what happened to people in prisons. In Queensland, there's a section of the Corrective Services Act that prevents researchers and journalists from speaking to prisoners. So it's really difficult to obtain contemporaneous accounts of what's actually going on. However, coroner's inquest findings do provide us with a lot of information about what's happening in prisons, as coroners are charged with determining causes of death in deaths in custody. And in recognition of how important that source of information is in knowing about what happens in custody and knowing about how people die, we decided that it would be a really great idea to get some of our students involved in creating some kind of resource that would allow the community to be able to access that information.
Absolutely. And I found it quite surprising that there wasn't this database before. Why is it important to have the record from all states and territories in a pool of information together?
I think what you find is that if you read death in custody inquests across the country, there's very similar themes that come through. And in order to get that sense, it's really important that you're able to access all deaths in custody across the country. So there are similar trends, similar concerns. It also, as you say, we were surprised as well that there had been no initiative to date that brought together all of the coroner's inquest findings to one place, because in most other areas of law that does exist. There are databases that you can search to find these cases, but the fact that coroner's inquest findings had been neglected was, really surprising and a really important gap that we wanted to fill. And because in law schools we have access to so many wonderful, passionate, intelligent students, we thought it was a really good opportunity for them to learn more about this very important issue and also to contribute to something that's really important to the community.
And you mentioned, we mentioned before that there has been an update to this database. Can you tell us about that new update?
Yeah, so when we started the project way back in 2016, we thought that we would be able to read all of the coroner's inquests on deaths in custody within the first year or so, and then we would be able to make that information available. But we realised very quickly that there are so many deaths in custody that happen, and I think members of the public would be pretty surprised to learn just how many people die in custody across the country every year. So it became apparent to us quite quickly that we weren't going, this was not going to be a quick task. This is going to take us many years to read. And of course, it has taken us 4 years. So when we first launched the project, we really wanted to get something out there, because by that stage in 2018, the students had already read 500 cases. And even though we weren't quite up to date yet, we really wanted to make that information available as quickly as possible, because it was really important, we felt, that be out there. So we decided to launch what we had, those first 500 cases, back in 2018. And the wonderful IT staff that have helped us, Joshua and Leslie at UQ, again, on a pro bono basis, did what they could to help us get that information out there really quickly. And we set them a task of really building up a whole website in a month, which was a pretty huge job. And you know, their dedication was extraordinary and continues to be. So we got what we could out there in that first version, always with a view to improving it as soon as we could. And so this new version adds 200 more cases, so we're up to date now, and our goal is to remain up to date point in time, and also hugely improves the search function, makes it so much more user-friendly, and really full credit to the IT staff who have helped us, as I say, in their own time. And I think that's really important, and I think our project is a really good example of what universities can achieve when staff and students get together to do a project in their own time on something really important.
It's definitely a really, really important topic, and a big kudos to the IT team there. That's a big job to get it all up in 1 month. And sadly, we hope that it wouldn't be such a big job to keep up to date with all the numbers. Unfortunately, we do have to leave it there. But thank you so much for telling us all about it.
No problem. Thanks for your time.